Welcome to the online ministry of La Jolla United Methodist Church, a congregation of faithful Christians along the beautiful Southern California coast. Together we seek to grow in individual spirituality and in community with one another. All are invited to join in this vibrant faith community. More information can be found on our website at lajollaunitedmethodist.org. May you be enriched in the hearing of these words, and may you receive and enjoy God's blessing. Our scripture reading today is from a continuation of Paul's first letter to the church in Corinth. It's the 13th chapter, verses 1 through 13, commonly known as the love chapter of 1 Corinthians. If I speak in tongues of human beings and of angels, but I don't have love, I'm a clanging gong or a clashing cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and I know all the mysteries and everything else, and if I have such complete faith that I can move mountains, but I don't have love, I'm nothing. If I give away everything I have and hand over my own body to feel good about what I've done, but I don't have love, I receive no benefit whatsoever. Love is patient. Love is kind. It isn't jealous. It doesn't brag. It isn't arrogant. It isn't rude. It doesn't seek its own advantage. It isn't irritable. It doesn't keep a record of complaints. It isn't happy with injustice. But it is happy with the truth. Love puts up with all things, trusts in all things, hopes for all things, endures all things. Love never fails. As for prophecies, they will be brought to an end. As for tongues, they will stop. As for knowledge, it will be brought to an end. We know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when the perfect comes, what is partial will be brought to an end. When I was a child, I used to speak like a child, reason like a child, think like a child. Now that I've become a man, I put an end to childish things. Now we see a reflection in a mirror. Then we will see face to face. Now I know partially, but then I will know completely in the same way that I have been completely known. Now faith, hope, and love remain these three things, and the greatest of these is love.
What does it mean to be a Christian? Who's Jesus? Are these important traditions, important stories? What are these written words that inspire and challenge? Is there still room for spirituality? Is there still room for beauty? Is there room for wonder? Join La Jolla United Methodist Church as we learn or relearn what it means to be a Christian, as we learn that our sole job is to
I don't know if you've experienced it. I hope that you have. I assume that you have. When maybe you see someone that you haven't seen in a while, maybe it's a cousin or a relative, maybe it's a coworker, maybe over this time of COVID, that's particularly prevalent, where there's someone that you haven't seen in a while and suddenly you see them. And it's telling how different they look. Now, this seems to happen when children grow. It seems as though children grow particularly fast. I confess there have been times when one of my children has woken up in the morning, and I'm sure they're several inches taller. But I mean those more dramatic things. My son Zachary is off at a soccer game today, but you may notice, whether we've been in the room or online, you may notice that every time he joins me up here for children's time, he seems bigger. Sometimes it's dramatic changes when he cuts his hair, but other times it's just that he seems like he's grown. And maybe you've had that experience with a child or a grandchild or a cousin. someone that you haven't seen in a while, and suddenly you see them, and they're like this whole different human being. Maybe you've seen that with an older relative. Maybe you've seen that with an uncle or a grandparent who you haven't seen them in a while, and then you see them again, and suddenly their hair is grayer. Suddenly their skin looks a little bit different. Sometimes those gaps of time help us to see some of the change that takes place. Because we don't see, when somebody says that thing about us, oh my gosh, I haven't seen you so long, you look so different. We don't see those ourselves. We see ourselves almost every day, usually in the mirror. So we don't necessarily see those things. When somebody says to says about my children, oh my gosh, they've grown so much. And yes, of course, there are those times where it seems like they've grown several inches overnight, but for the most part, I see them every single day. And so I don't see that dramatic change that others might see. I had the privilege over the course of this weekend, I went up Friday and I came back yesterday. I was up at Camp Cedar Glen. Camp Cedar Glen is deeply entrenched in the lives of many of our congregation members through family camp, through summer camps. I was up there because it was a final on-site interview for a new potential camp director. They've been looking for a camp director for some time, and I had the privilege of serving on an interview team. And I was there, and I slept overnight in one of the cabins, and I was looking in the mirror, brushing my teeth, and I realized I have this ugly spot on my face, and I hadn't seen it before. Now, I look at myself in the mirror every single day because I think it's important to brush my teeth, and I hadn't seen it before. And sometimes even the more significant changes, we don't even notice, but I really think that it's like I was in this different environment. I was in this different place. I promise the mirrors at Cedar Glen are not better quality than the ones we normally have at home. But it was just that different environment with a different background and a different setting and different smells in the air, and just everything was different. And my eyes, I don't know, were just a bit more perceptive. Honestly, I think that's the miracle of camp, is we get away from the norm and we are more open to God's presence. That's not the point I'm getting to today. But what I want to get to is how sometimes when we experience something, see something, hear something over and over and over again, sometimes we don't hear it with the impact that it really deserves. Now, the reason I bring this up is because the text that we read today, the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians, is something we likely hear regularly. It is arguably Paul's most famous writing. Love is patient and kind. It's not arrogant or boastful or rude. If you're like me, you have sections of it memorized. You might have the whole thing memorized. And where do we hear it? We hear it very often at weddings, and that's great. It's a wonderful expression of love. I've heard it at more than one funeral service, memorial service. It's a wonderful expression of love. And we can learn from it. We can be reminded. But does it have the same impact if we're not really paying attention? If we just hear it as though, oh yes, this is that thing that I heard at the last wedding. This is that text that I heard before. Yes, I've heard this. Does it have the same impact? Or is it perhaps diminished when we hear it over and over again, unless we choose to hear it again, to study it, to understand its context? Otherwise, perhaps, friends, we're simply looking at it through a mirror. I'm going to get the text again because I want to read parts of it again. Except I'm going to pick up the right sheet of paper. That love is patient and kind. That it's not jealous, it doesn't brag, it isn't arrogant, it isn't rude. It doesn't seek its own advantage, it isn't irritable, it doesn't keep a record of complaints, it isn't happy with injustice, but is happy with the truth. That love puts up with all things, trusts in all things, hopes for all things, and endures all things. And surely for any of us who have had the privilege of being in a relationship, that deeply loving, committed relationship, of course, we want to live this out. We want to live out a love that is patient and kind. Because in our relationship, we know that it can be harmful to be filled with jealousy arrogance, bragging and rudeness, seeking our own advantage, irritability, complaining, injustice. And we know that as we live into a relationship, we want to be happy with the truth, that we want to live in such a way that we put up that we put up with all things, trust all things, hope for all things, endure all things. As I said with the children, that we want to live actively in that way. So of course it is an important and sacred text that we celebrate as couples begin relationships together, as couples enter into a covenant relationship together, a relationship that is built on love, that is patient and kind, that is happy with the truth, that puts up with all things, trusts all things, hopes for all things, and endures all things. Because we know that if we don't live it out in those relationships, we're a clanging gong or a clashing cymbal. That if we don't live our lives with love in action, as Paul writes, we are nothing. How do we live into a relationship if we don't do it actively? Maybe we know. I'm sure there are some of us who do, who know how our relationship can crumble and fail when we don't live our love actively and outwardly. And of course, my friends, these are important lessons for us to understand. These are important lessons for us to learn. And we know that this can go beyond covenant relationships. This can go beyond romantic relationships. Of course, our relationships with our families are filled with this same kind of love. Love that is patient and kind and not arrogant or boastful or rude. That endures all things, puts up with all things. A love of action. Of course we understand this. So when we think about our cousins, our children, our grandchildren, our parents, our grandparents, maybe even our crazy aunts or uncles who do weird things and say weird things and all of those, we might look at those persons with love that is patient and kind and not arrogant or boastful or rude, that puts up with all things and trusts in all things and hopes for all things and endures all things. We must also remember the context in which Paul was writing these words. Friends, we must acknowledge that the context in which Paul was writing this was not a celebratory, congratulatory letter to a couple who was getting married. It's not who he was writing to. Wasn't writing to a family that, you know, were commonly together and sharing meals together and, you know, doing family things. I would suggest that's not who he was writing to either. I mean, we can make this text pretty and beautiful, surely it is, but by taking it out of context, we don't necessarily see the deep and profound meaning that instructs us today. Friends, we can make the Bible say anything we want if we take it out of context. Let us understand to whom Paul is writing. Let us acknowledge the difficult circumstance, because friends, it applies to us today. And we've talked about it over the course of this sermon series. Do you remember we began at the beginning with baptism? We talked about how it was God's Spirit who was present. And then we went directly into Paul's letter talking about unity in the Spirit. Then we talked last week about our diversity in terms of how we bring different things as the body of Christ. We bring different gifts. We are united in the Spirit. We bring these different gifts. For what purpose? Paul says, I will show you a better way. And what is that way? Love. But to whom is he writing? He is writing to a church that is divided. He's writing to a community that is bickering with each other, who elevate some of them over others, who say, well, my gifts are better than your gifts. God is more present in my life than in your life. I know the right ways to do this, and you don't. And friends, we might apply that lens directly to the United Methodist Church, where some elevate themselves over others. Say, I'm right, and you're wrong. We might apply that lens to the church universal. I read the scriptures the right way, and you don't. I believe the right thing about resurrection, and you don't. I believe the right thing about crucifixion, and you don't. I have the way, and you don't. I'm closer to God, and you're not. I am more worthy, and you are not. Friends, my sense is that the community to which Paul writes is remarkably similar to the United Methodist Church and to the Church Universal. And I would even go so far as to say, with our cultural and political climate, Paul writes this letter to us today. Because how many of us say, I'm right and you're wrong. My way is better and your way is worse. My form of government is better and your form of government is worse. I want this one and I want that one. My interpretation of this is better and yours is worse. Paul writes this letter to us. And he calls us to a better way. He calls us to a better way by saying, if I express any of the gifts that we have listed, any of the gifts that are boasted about, if I express all the knowledge, if I express any of these things and I don't do it with love, then all I am is noise. Paul says, if I know all the things, if I can see the future, if my faith is so deep it's even greater than a mustard seed that enables me to move mountains, but if I don't do it in love, I am nothing. Paul says, if I do all the most incredible things in the world, if I give everything I have away, if I give up my body in sacrifice to others, and I don't do it with love, it's useless. I receive no benefit whatsoever. If I do all the good things there are to do, and I do it for self-gratification, I do it for recognition, I do it so I won't look bad in front of my coworkers or my pastor or my neighbors, I have done nothing. That's how I read what Paul writes. And then he tells us that love is patient and kind. So how do we interact with people? Particularly, my friends, I would ask the difficult question of how do we interact with people that we don't get along with, that we disagree with? Because it's easy to say, well, you know, of course, these people that I agree with, these people that live in my home, these people that, you know, I work with and we all sort of come from the same perspective, of course, I can live out love and compassion and care and grace. But how do we interact with those when we don't have that relationship? Are we patient? Are we kind? Or are we jealous or arrogant? Are we filled with bragging and rudeness? Are we working for our own advantage? Are we irritable? Do we keep a long list of complaints? Do we even celebrate when something bad happens to them? As a technical person, you may understand that I enjoy social media. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I haven't gotten on the TikTok bandwagon, I confess. But I love technical things. But one of the challenges of technical things is when there is that barrier between keyboard and person. It is a whole lot easier to be jealous and arrogant and rude. It's a whole lot easier to seek our own advantage, to be irritable, to keep a record of complaints, and to celebrate injustice. I confess that the way I see the world, that when we understand that someone gets their news from that other source, that we treat those persons with jealousy and arrogance and rudeness, that we seek our own advantage, are irritable, keep a record of complaints, and maybe are even happy with injustice. You see, my friends, how we treat those with whom we disagree may inform how we would answer Wesley's question, how is it with our souls? Are our souls filled with light and hope and grace? Are our souls filled with love? Perhaps the ways we treat those with whom we disagree, not only outwardly, but inwardly, maybe that would answer that question. The good news, my friends, is that love never fails. That our own knowledge, our own arrogance, our own gifts will be brought to an end. That we who look at our sacred text, at our country, at our world, at our circumstances, at our divisions, we who look at those today likely look through a mirror. Some translations would say through a mirror dimly. But I believe that God and God's love call us to a better way, to grow in knowledge, to grow in experience, so that rather than speaking and reasoning like a child, we can do so putting an end to childish things. That we can step around or through or whatever that looks like, that mirror dimly, and see face to face. That we can grow in such a way that where we once saw partially, then we can know completely as we are completely known. The good news, my friends, is that faith, hope, and love remains. And of course, the greatest of these is love. It is my hope, dear friends, that as we read this text anew, as we understand it in its context, that we will make a careful and intentional choice. That whether we are interacting with those that we know and love, or know those who we don't, those from another faith tradition, those from another church, those from a non-church tradition, those from another political party, those who get their news from another source, that we will in every single moment, both outwardly and inwardly, interact or think or reason through the lens of love. Because friends, to do anything else is just noise. Amen. Friends, each week we try to come up with something tangible to do over the course of the week. Sometimes I come up with something very specific. Sometimes it's a little less specific. Sometimes I invite you to reach out to me and let me know if you have done something that, you know, had some kind of profound or important realization for you. And I hope that you will reach out to me. I hope that you will let me know what changes take place in your observation or in your life when you do these things. This week, I would like you to look at your interactions, particularly with those with whom you disagree, and ask yourself, are these interactions of love, both outwardly and inwardly, or are they not? It's a simple thing. It's not something that anyone will notice, at least probably not, unless it causes a change. But it's also an important thing. So again, I would invite you to look at an interaction with someone with whom you disagree and ask yourself, both outwardly and inwardly, has this been an interaction of love?